Sometimes students think literature written during the English Renaissance was written in Old English, a natural mistake for beginners, given the sometimes daunting difficulties of making sense of the language. In fact, Renaissance English is early modern English. Our contemporary English is much more like Shakespeare's English than Shakespeare's English is like Chaucer's, and way closer than Shakespeare is to, say, Beowulf. But that's not much comfort to a student struggling with unfamiliar idioms, odd-looking syntax, unexpected and often loose punctuation, and our old friend, irregular orthography. I tell my students that even scholars read the glosses in the notes, but my students still get that panicky look when they have to confront Milton's prose, or almost anything in poetry. The only thing that reliably helps get them over that first "ah," as they say in Peanuts, is to hear me read the passage aloud. I like to think I read pretty well. All professors like to think that, and who can blame them? But I think the real key is reading aloud with comprehension. Which raises a paradox. If the students don't understand the work, how are they helped by the fact I do? How can they even tell that I do? Why is my reading the passage aloud sometimes, not always, worth an hour of patient work on choosing interpretive strategies, mining the Oxford English Dictionary, and teasing the meaning out themselves in a close reading? There's something about the explaining voice, the voice that performs understanding, that doesn't just convey information or narrate hermeneutics, but shapes out of a shared atmosphere an intimate drama of cognitive action in time. I am reminded of Longinus on the Sublime. For an instant, we believe that we have created what we have only heard. When we hear someone read with understanding, we participate in that understanding almost as if the voice is enacting our own comprehension. We hear the shape of the emerging meaning and intuit the mind that experiences that meaning even as it expresses it. And it's all ours. So this one's going out to all you Miltonauts out there. You've heard L'Allegro on Podcast 1. Now here's the other side. Contest or compliment or lingering self-temptation. Let's talk. Il Penseroso by John Milton. Hence vain deluding joys, the brood of folly without father bred. How little you bested, or fill the fixed mind with all your toys. Dwell in some idle brain, and fancies fond with gaudy shapes possess, as thick and numberless as the gay motes that people the sunbeams, or likest hovering dreams, the fickle pensioners of Morpheus's train. But hail thou, goddess, sage and holy, hail divinest melancholy, whose saintly visage is too bright to hit the sense of human sight, and therefore to our weaker view, o'erlaid with black, stayed wisdom's hue, black, but such as in esteem Prince Memnon's sister might beseem, or that starred Ethiop queen that strove to set her beauty's praise above the sea nymphs, and their powers offended. Yet thou art higher far descended, thee bright-haired Vesta long of yore to solitary Saturn bore, his daughter she, in Saturn's reign such mixture was not held a stain. Oft in glimmering bowers and glades he met her, and in secret shades of woody Ida's inmost grove, while yet there was no fear of Jove. Come, pensive nun, devout and pure, sober, steadfast and demure, all in a robe of darkest grain, flowing with majestic train, and sable stole of cypress lawn over thy decent shoulders drawn. Come, but keep thy wonted state, with even step and musing gait, and looks commercing with the skies, thy rapt soul sitting in thine eyes. There held in holy passion still, forget thyself to marble, till with a sad leaden downward cast, thou fix them on the earth as fast, and join with thee calm peace and quiet. Spare fast that oft with gods doth diet, and hears the muses in a ring, aye round about Jove's altar sing. And add to these retired leisure, that in trim gardens takes his pleasure. But first, and chiefest, with thee bring him that yon soars on golden wing, guiding the fiery-wheeled throne, the cherub Contemplation. And the mute silence hissed along, lest Philomel will deign a song in her sweetest, saddest plight, smoothing the rugged brow of night, while Cynthia checks her dragon yoke gently o'er the accustomed oak. Sweet bird that shunts the noise of folly, most musical, most melancholy. Thee, chantress, oft the woods among, I woo to hear thy evensong, and missing thee, I walk unseen on the dry, smooth-shaven green to behold the wandering moon riding near her highest noon, like one that hath been led astray through the heaven's wide, pathless way. And oft, as if her head she bowed, stooping through a fleecy cloud, oft on a plat of rising ground I hear the far-off curfew sound o'er some wide-watered shore, swinging slow with sullen roar. Or, if the air will not permit, some still removed place will fit, where glowing embers through the room teach light to counterfeit a gloom, far from all resort of mirth, save the cricket on the hearth, or the bellman's drowsy charm to bless the doors from nightly harm. Or let my lamp at midnight hour be seen in some high lonely tower, where I may oft outwatch the bear with thrice great Hermes, or unsphere the spirit of Plato to unfold what worlds or what vast regions hold the immortal mind that hath forsook her mansion in this fleshly nook. And of those demons that are found in fire, air, flood, or underground, whose power hath a true consent with planet or with element. Sometime let gorgeous tragedy in sceptred pall come sweeping by, presenting Thebes or Pelops' line, or the tale of Troy divine, or what, though rare, of later age ennobled hath the buskined stage. But, O sad virgin, that thy power might raise Musaeus from his bower, or bid the soul of Orpheus sing such notes as, warbled to the string, drew iron tears down Pluto's cheek, and made hell grant what love did seek. Or call up him that left half told the story of Cambuscan bold, of Cambol, and of Algarsife, and who had Canacee to wife, that owned the virtuous ring and glass, and of the wondrous horse of brass, on which the Tartar king did ride. And if aught else great bards beside in sage and solemn tunes have sung, of tourneys and of trophies hung, of forests and enchantments drear, where more is meant than meets the ear. Thus night oft see me in thy pale career, till civil-suited morn appear, not tricked and frounced as she was wont with the Attic boy to hunt, but kerchiefed in a comely cloud, while rocking winds are piping loud, or ushered with a shower still, when the gust hath blown his fill, ending on the rustling leaves with minute drops from off the eaves. And when the sun begins to fling his flaring beams, Me, goddess, bring to arched walks of twilight groves and shadows brown that sylvan loves of pine or monumental oak, where the rude axe with heaved stroke was never heard the nymphs to daunt or fright them from their hallowed haunt. There, in close covert by some brook, where no profaner eye may look, hide me from day's garish eye, while the bee with honeyed thigh that at her flowery work doth sing, and the waters murmuring with such consort as they keep, entice the dewy feathered sleep, and let some strange mysterious dream wave at his wings in airy stream of lively portraiture displayed, softly on my eyelids laid. And as I wake, sweet music breathe above, about, or underneath, sent by some spirit to mortals good, or the unseen genius of the wood. But let my dew feet never fail to walk the studious cloisters pale, and love the high embowed roof with antic pillars massy proof, and storied windows richly dight, casting a dim religious light. There let the pealing organ blow to the full-voiced choir below, in service high, and anthems clear, as may with sweetness through mine ear dissolve me into ecstasies, and bring all heaven before mine eyes. And may at last my weary age find out the peaceful hermitage, the hairy gown and mossy cell, where I may sit and rightly spell of every star that heaven doth shew, and every herb that sips the dew, till old experience do attain to something like prophetic strain. These pleasures melancholy give, and I with thee will choose to live.